This is CliffCentral.com.
As I inched closer to the edge, my entire body shook. My mom encouraged me, but my dad laughed. I was terrified of heights. As a 10-year-old, it felt like we were in a movie. This effect was amplified by the clouds hovering so close, I felt I could reach up and grab an armful. I took 2 more steps and looked over the edge and literally froze. That's when my dad stopped laughing. He grabbed me and dragged my stiff body back from the edge. Looking over the edge of the Empire State Building was the most terrifying thing you could have asked my 10-year-old body to do. But we were in New York on holiday, and as kids growing up in North Carolina, going to the top of the Empire State Building meant you'd finally been in New York. Welcome back to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice, and this is the show where we explore the link between brain power and brand influence. A huge thank you to everyone who continues to listen and share this show with friends, colleagues. Today we explore the role of architecture in nations and cities' identity. Before we dive in, take a moment. Think about the buildings and spaces that you identify with and inspire you. Whether it's the Taj Mahal in India that makes you feel more spiritual, the Great Wall in China that makes you feel like Trump, a wall, or if F&B Stadium in Soweto that makes you feel a sense of pride that you can conquer. Remember when Casper wanted to fill it up and what people thought and how it was symbolic, the power. Or maybe it's the Great Pyramids and how it makes you believe anything's possible. The design of these architectural wonders are the backbone of the identity of those regions. To explore this conversation, we have a young dynamic architect who's on a mission to pioneer the future of the South African aesthetic, and maybe even global ambitions. Kimba Mekwa, a partner at the Magi Group, an emerging young architectural firm, is in the building. Welcome to the Brain and Brand Show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
It's really awesome to have you in the spot for transparency purposes. We play basketball together. And I often say that you can see by how a person operates on a basketball court how they are in life. And your whole MO is control, vision, strategy. One of my favorite things you do on the basketball court, you like, guys, relax.
I'll take that.
Guys, relax.
Yeah, I'll take that.
What was like the first building that sort of captured your headspace growing up?
It's interesting because I moved to the U.S. when I was 8 years old. And we moved to Seattle, Washington. And I'm originally from the Free State, so a country kid.
I didn't know
kid.
That. You're a Free State kid.
I'm a Free State kid, man, you know. So, yeah, I think if you know anything about Seattle, besides the fact that it rains, you know, so much, there is the Space Needle, which was built for the World Trade Fair. And I think probably if I had to choose one thing, it would be that,
oh, really?
You know. Yeah, just being a young kid from South Africa to see something like that. We didn't have anything like that, you know, and you know, it constantly kind of like challenged my mind, you know, how is this thing standing up? Of course, we didn't know anything about structures, you know, any theories, but just sure. Like, you know, why isn't the wind blowing this thing down? And you know, so I think that's probably the first kind of first structure, even though it's not technically a building, but
sure.
It's definitely an icon.
Nice. I mean, so when did you fall in love with design and the value of architecture?
Wow. I think it was, supposedly like a subconscious love at first sight. Again, growing up in the U.S., I think as a kid, I'm a very visual person. So I think as a kid, I was constantly, and I was very quiet. So I was constantly just kind of engaging with my space around me because I wasn't very verbal, you know. So playgrounds and I think the spatial dynamics are very different. You know, and coming from South Africa, then having a chance to
quite
go to, you know,
a country,
restrained, seeing how different people interpreted space, even as a kid, even though I didn't understand any of that,
sure.
It definitely made an impact. And I only realized that probably after high school.
So when you were in school, were those the subjects, the creative subjects?
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Those
definitely. So in school, I did art, art, literature. Definitely more creative. I stayed away from the sciences. Yeah, man, I really loved to draw as a kid, you know. And I think also with the hip hop influence, getting into the whole graph thing was definitely a big thing in my childhood too.
But isn't science a big part of the numbers, and isn't it a big part of architecture?
It definitely is. It definitely is. It's funny because, you know, I engage with science a lot differently than I did in high school.
I think it was
the way it was, you know, given to me or taught to me.
Because
you know?
It's separate and it's on the side. Yeah. It's a different.
Yeah. You know, mathematics is part of my everyday, you know. But yeah, I engage with it very, very differently.
You've traveled the world and, you know, literally all over the world. What are some spaces and structures that move you?
Wow. That's a good question. I think the city of Paris in its entirety really, really moves me. I think coming from South Africa, anywhere really, where you can experience like spatial democracy is really a big thing for me. So I don't generally do like the touristy things. But any kind of space which people can inhabit and kind of, you know, be into their own and really kind of motivates me. And it's quite a simple yet dynamic thing, and a thing which we really miss, in my opinion, in this country. You know, a thing we need more of, you know, more spaces for people.
What are your thoughts around taking, for example, spaces like the Crawl? You know, the Crawl changed my life. I went through a ceremony where I was initiated. And when they set me down, they set me in the middle of the circular crawl at the end of the ceremony to tell me about what brotherhood meant in terms of their ability to survive and thrive in that community. But the design of that crawl, for me, it's just like African architectural genius.
Right.
Like literally genius. When I reflect back on it and how it kind of created the community for the conversations to thrive and the bonding.
Right.
Do you feel like we need more of that in the African aesthetic?
Definitely. So just, you know, being a young architecture student doing history and theory at UCT, I was quite conflicted because, you know, they touched on a little bit about Egypt, but really started, and then antiquity with, Greek architecture and then the Romanesque. And I was really quite conflicted. And I think I only realized later on, I was silently rebelling against the idea that, you know, we don't have on the continent, you know, anything of this stature or this nature, you know. And then being an adult, you know, actually going into the research, you actually see, you know, we have, I mean, it's maybe not called architecture, but there's a real rationale behind design, really powerful stuff. So the Crawl as a concept is very, very powerful. Very, very. It's extremely African, you know? Yeah.
So one of the things that, you know, structures, architecture is often very political, right? So you look at the Middle East, you look at Dubai. I mean, you know, sometimes I feel like a lot of these countries there's a lot of patriarchal forces,
right.
and you know, these buildings for them are like a phallus, and they're
right.
literally trying to almost give the middle finger to the rest of the world. What do you feel like the role of politics or architecture is in politics?
Yeah, I mean, historically, they've gone hand in hand. You know, we can name a few. We start here, you know, with apartheid architecture, really powerful dynamic that we're dealing with today. Still a lot more questions than answers in the 24, 25 years post-apartheid that we had. You know, and you see it with, you know, Third Reich Germany, what they were able to do. You see it with communist Russia, you know. So architecture and politics can go hand in hand, you know, for good and for bad.
But I feel like, for example, in Cape Town, you know, the sort of the Dutch kind of, you know, colonial influences mm-hmm. would prop up the mm-hmm. confidence of someone who comes from that heritage.
Correct, correct. Right?
You would feel almost a sense of entitlement, etc. And so how do we get that right? How do you add African influences in spaces like that to prop up the other side? You know, for if you're an African person, you know, how do you get that same level of confidence? So instead of worrying about tearing them down, how do we boost ourselves using architecture?
Right, right. I think it starts with, I mean, I quite like how we interpret space. So it's, you know, with Cape Dutch architecture, you know, there are a few references, the gable, you know, low walls, the kind of materials you use, which I mean, obviously indicative of some European influence, also indicative of our local influence. But what I'm more interested in is how we define space, you know? That's more important to me. Actually, not how this thing looks, but like how we create space and what we do in space. That's a powerful kind of, you know, kind of starting point and statement to say, you know, if you had to ask the question of design, you know, how do Africans create space? That leads to a whole bunch of, you know,
amazing opportunities. You know what? I would love to be a fly on the wall when you and your partner at the firm
yeah, it's crazy.
Are having these conversations because I think for the average person, like the average person doesn't have architect friends.
Right.
Just to take us behind the curtain quickly.
Yeah.
Like when you start having conversations about how you define space, what are some of the things that come up? Like how do you define space?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's quite heated in the office, which I like, you know. So we're not a sterile environment. It's really important that even the juniors, everybody engages. You need to have a voice. As a designer, you definitely need to have a voice, you know. And that's something that I had to learn for myself as well, you know. But we discuss anything from kind of, you know, today's, you know, current affairs politically and how they influence the whole kind of landscape. You know, we talk about gender dynamics. It's an important thing in construction. There's not a lot of female representation. There's not a lot of Black representation as well. There's also not a lot of, I guess, youth, if I can use that in inverted commas, representation. So we kind of represent the other, you know, and trying to like scratch a place for ourselves. So it's important to have, you know, these kind of dialogues within ourselves so that when we go out in public, you know, we're represented. So this stuff, bottom line, like we care about this stuff. We're very passionate about what we do, you know, so it translates into the work and into the conversations that we have.
And I can imagine the space conversation will also often depend on the region.
Yeah.
Like if you're having a conversation about space in Bloemfontein versus KZN versus Cape Town, it's a different, right?
Right. So one of the fundamentals of architecture is how you respond to the climate.
I got it.
You know,
okay.
So
that's important. You know, do you think SA is thinking big enough when it comes to architecture?
I think you have to have some context to that, in my opinion. No. I think there's a great space for that. You know, one of the questions that we often ask each other in the office is, what have we done in 25 years? You know, and that's a big question, you know, and what do we want to do in the next 25 years? And that's the space that the Magi Group is in. What do we want to do in the next 25 years? So I think, we have a vested interest in the downtown space. We want to create a contemporary African city, you know, and there's a lot of infrastructure, good infrastructure that isn't being used or to its potential. And we're visionaries at the end of the day. So we've got a lot of things planned for downtown, a lot.
Whenever I drive through a township, there's a specific feel, for example, there's a specific rhythm. There is, you know you've left another part of the country and you've entered a new space, right? And depending on the day, you'll feel differently. Like if it's a weekend, there's often this kind of celebration vibe, whatever. How do you feel that the structures and the spaces in townships impact a young mind, you know, of a kid coming out of a township?
Yeah. So I suppose maybe it's a slightly bit different now because there's been you know, effort to formalize a lot of the larger townships, Soweto, you know, Khayelitsha and Cape Town. But when we were growing up, you know, we didn't have basic services, electricity, sanitation, insulation in the houses, houses to begin with for some people. But those things really, really affect and shape how you view the world, you know. So I never looked at township spaces as infrastructurally. I never had it. There was always a disconnect. But what I took out of that is how people engage with each other. That's a critical thing. So yeah, the people are the most, you know, the people are the assets in the townships. So how do you start creating more people oriented design? That's one of the questions we ask ourselves too.
Got it. So, I mean, I think that you just kind of answered the next question about an essay benefiting from innovation design thinking, because it's, you start with the people, with empathetic,
right?
Being empathetic and thinking about it from a people
right.
perspective. Okay, got right. it. So what has essay gotten right? Like, you know, people always like to talk about what's wrong, but what has South Africa gotten right?
Look, I mean, we've infrastructurally, we've done a lot of things. You know, for instance, 2010 World Cup, building all that stadium infrastructure. Again, that those even I mean, they are quite conflicted spaces. But if you think about 50,000 to 80,000 people coming together for any kind of event, that's a significant moment. You know, so and obviously, you know, this past weekend with the Global Citizen concert as well, you know, just another example of that. So Stadia has been built, and it's not just for Stadia, but again, it's just how people come together, you know. So we've gotten that right. I think we're getting bulk infrastructure. I think that if we had to go down to the micro scale, it's not all the way right, but, you know, a lot more people have access to water, clean water, electricity, you know, and so forth.
Why should people care about your work?
My work is, you know, we often debate in the office about what is more significant to the human existence, architecture or music.
Oh, wow.
So that's a strong debate right there for us. But I always, so I lean to the music side and I say architecture second. But, you know, we influence, architecture and design influences your entire life, you know, and people, what we struggle with is how many people are unaware about how bad design and architecture is influencing their lives. You know, so that's something we want to change. You know, we want to interrogate that and scratch that, you know.
So where do you stand on this music or architecture? Which is more influential?
Look, I go with music. My partner's going to kill me, you know. Probably all the other architects are going to kill me. But we're a close second. I'd say architecture is a close second, you know. At the end of the day, if you strip everything away, you strip away the malls, you strip away the cars, you know what I mean? You strip away the clothes even. Like, people need shelter and people need a way to express themselves. And that's never going to change.
Wow. Yeah. I've never thought of the two of them that way. Is there anything you guys are working on or you have worked on that you could share with us?
Yeah. So we're working on a number of things. Quite recently just finished two restaurants. One is here in Rivonia at the Wedge. It's called Kitchen Vibes.
Oh yeah, I know that space.
Yeah, it's a Pan-African stylized restaurant. I urge everybody to go check it out. They have really good food. And we finished a space in Bromfontein also called The Artivist, which is sort of post-gallery, flexible eatery / music / lounge space, which is run by, you know, some great guys, Ken Zero and Bradley Williams. I'd advise people to go check out those two
nice.
Spaces.
Nice. And for people who want to follow your work and the Magi Group, where can they find you guys?
So we are on Instagram. We are at Magi Group Starkitecture, which is spelled M-A-G-I-G-R-O-U-P-S-T MARCHITECTURE. Magi Group Starkitecture.
Timba, thanks for joining us on the Brain and Brand Show.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Appreciate it.
At the beginning of the show, I asked you which design buildings and spaces move and inspire you as a listener. Now ask yourself a different question. Why? Why does the Eiffel Tower in Paris, which originally was seen as an eyesore by locals and they boycotted against it. What is it about? Why do people want to get married and then go stand underneath it? Is it the building, the design, or is it the story? Or is it both? And more importantly, the next time you're in a space that moves you, ask yourself, is it the story or the structure? And what stories would you like to see come alive? Challenge these architects to infuse your history and your background into the spaces you visit often. We'll be back next week with the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show.
This is CliffCentral.com.